Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Going to take a look at things like insulation, ventilation, vapor barriers, all kinds of home repair and renovation things with our two guests today. Chad Spate. Chad owns Chad's Carpentry in Madison. John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. These guys have been with us a lot, many times, and great to have them back. And certainly if you have questions relating to your home, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question, even some photographs there. Maybe you've got something of concern about your house right now. Maybe there's something relating to insulation and ventilation. Whatever, give us a call or shoot us an email or go to our Facebook page. And John, great to have you back.
Yeah, always fun, Larry. And good to see you.
Yeah, and Chad, great to see you again as well.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
We've had a kind of a mild winter so far, so I'm sure heating, a lot of people are happier than they would have been, especially with the heating bills. They're probably down a little bit. What kinds of issues are you seeing out there today as you know, people contact you and with questions about their own home? I'm wondering, condensation's one that seems to come up a fair amount with windows, for example, Chad.
Correct. Yeah, condensation is often a problem in a tighter home, a home that's been built a little better, say, than the older leaky homes, which condensation was rarely a problem in. Once you've reduced the amount of air leakage, then the humidity that's in the house has to be controlled mechanically. Our old Wisconsin homes, the old farmhouses and just the older, leakier homes, that cold, dry air is leaking in all the time and condensation just isn't a problem. So, you know, part of being a remodeling professional or a business or a building specialist is to understand what causes these problems so that we can focus our time on fixing the problem rather than just, treating the symptom.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, Chad, where you wouldn't want to remodel or build a new house and have it like the old days and drafty. So
right.
We do tighten up a house to meet expectations of that homeowner. So we're tightening that house up, but at the same time having to address these other concerns, right, to meet expectations.
Yeah, yep. And there are good ways to meet those. To deal with those concerns, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the tighter the house, the more kind of thoughtful and precise we need to be in making sure that fresh air is brought into that home, and then also controlling or, mitigating the humidity as part of that. So dehumidification is often used in a well-built, tight home. And along with that, bringing in fresh air in a controlled manner. I mean, basically, we build a house to protect us from the elements. And so it's logical that we would want to have control over the climate in the home. And of course, people do assume, you know, they're going to air condition, they're going to heat a home. They want it to be comfortable. But it's important that all the various systems be in place so that it can be a comfortable and durable home.
Yeah, and not even in the window itself, right? Having a good window makes all the difference where we can control the air leakage and the humidity, but we still have to have a really good window in our very cold climate to eliminate condensation, I think.
Yeah.
Even the best dehumidification, we can't always drive that the humidity low enough to eliminate condensation if we have a poor window without having nosebleeds or having other effects on a respiratory system. So looking for that low U value and the Energy Star ratings on windows. Even there is a condensation rating on a lot of windows. If they go through the National Fenestration Rating Council, you can look for that as you purchase windows.
Mm. We have a listener from Waukesha who wonders about the best way to insulate basement walls to make a proper living space in a basement?
Well, basement walls are definitely a tricky area because a basement, particularly in an older home, probably does not have any sort of a water barrier on the exterior or vapor barrier. And it's so what that's going to do is that's going to allow the water that's in the ground around the home to essentially pass into that structure as vapor. And so whatever we do when we finish the walls, we have to make sure that that system is going to not be damaged or not cause problems. So typically what we're using is a closed cell foam on the basement wall. That can either be a spray-on urethane product, a two-part foam that's closed cell, or it can be some sheet insulating products. There are a couple of different types of closed cell foams that we will apply, and then we'll tape the seams. And often we'll foam it in at the top so that the sill boxes are sealed up well, and that gets sealed to the top of the foam board that is applied to the cement wall. Mm-hmm. If you have a drain tile system in a basement, a sump pump and a drain tile, and that can be retrofitted, we put them into a lot of homes on the inside, then you can actually have a drain plane put up on the inside of that wall, and it goes right down into the sump system so that any water that happens to make its way through ends up in the sump, but it is sealed and isolated from the interior living space.
That's nice.
You know, there are a variety of ways to do it, but generally I avoid using fiberglass or even cellulose down below grade because moisture can be an issue, and we don't want materials that are going to soak up that moisture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good point. So we have Irene in Phillips, Wisconsin, who has a question or comment for you guys. So let's go there. Hi, Irene. Oh, let's see. Hold on. Well, we should have her. She should be there. Hold on a second. Irene, are you there?
Oh, here I am. Can you hear me now?
Yep, can hear you now. Thank you.
Oh, great. Which is the better way to save energy on heating? Should I keep my thermostat lower, which I usually do, but then I hear the furnace come on every 15, 20 minutes, or should I set the thermostat higher and leave it at the higher level and not have the furnace going on and off?
So I'm going to assume, Irene, that you have a forced air natural gas furnace, right?
I have natural gas hot water heat.
Oh, a hot water heat. Okay. There are some older boilers that have cast iron heat exchangers that are a little bit bulkier, and they have a fair bit of weight to them that with those types of units, the recommendation is typically to leave the idle or leave the thermostat at one temperature because mm-hmm. it takes a lot of energy to raise that core temperature of the heat exchanger and heat that water. If you have a newer, a high efficient boiler with a stainless steel heat exchanger that's a little bit quicker to heat up, then certainly a thermostat setback is a good idea. And some of the estimates can be 2% savings for every degree that you set it back at night, as long as we're setting that temperature back, 8 hours or so.
Okay. I'll double check to see which I have, and then I'll know. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And then while we're at it, since I have a geothermal system, one of our builders said, well, just leave the thermostat at one temperature. Don't raise it up and down. What do you think about that, John?
Well, I think it also has to do with personal comfort and how you like to operate the house. Having a geothermal system, I think the reasoning there is that a geothermal system has a very low discharge temperature. So it's not able to bring the house up to your set point when the setback is gone. When it wants to bump it up from 60 degrees to 68 degrees, it's not going to do that quick, and you might be dissatisfied with how long that might take. So overall, comfort-wise, and the way the geothermal system works, you don't necessarily want the electric strip heat or natural gas backup to come on either. So I would agree with that assessment.
Let's take a call from Scott in Madison next. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I have an artist studio in the basement. It's a ranch-style home, and wanted to see about getting some kind of ventilation system down there for, I use oil paints and turpentine and stuff like that. Wondering, one, like what kind of systems would be good for that? Also, noise levels of a ventilation system, and then also, doesn't it just draw the heat out of the house?
Okay.
Certainly,
John,
it draws, certainly any ventilation system is going to draw heat and air out of the house, and that's just the penalty we have to pay. Everything takes a little bit of energy sometimes. It sounds, with the types of work that you're doing, anytime we can localize that work in a certain area and have a range hood or a draft hood in the vicinity and over which you're going to work. So my recommendation is to try to have that dedicated area, have a hood, and then run ductwork up a chaseway through the interior of the home and put a remote-mounted inline fan in the attic space that's going to draw from that hood, from the basement, and exhaust it up and out the top of the house.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. It makes good sense. Mike in Beaver Dam, we're on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
This is a question in regards to an interior remodel on an older farm home in the area here, where I've taken the walls and furred them out to a 2x6, and what I wanted to do was apply a 2-inch oil-based foam on the interior of the home, pressing it against the exterior boards that are there. Is that okay? And then in turn also then put in just some regular insulation to create a R value of approximately 20 plus.
Well, you can do something like that and have it be successful when you're applying a sheet material, and it sounds like that foil face material you're wanting to apply in the cavity.
Yes.
A couple of things. That is a vapor barrier, and so when you apply that on the cold side of that cavity, you're going to have to be extremely careful that it's caulked on all the joints, that air is not moving beyond that that sheet material. And then I assume when you say traditional materials on the inside, you're probably going to put up, say, a fiberglass bat material or something like that.
That's correct, sir. Yes.
So, you know, you don't want a double vapor barrier in that wall. So, in effect, you're going to have to put up unfaced bats, and that's a little bit of a, you know, you're typically, we try to have the vapor barrier on the heated side of the wall. So we would typically maybe want to put that that sheet material, in your case, to the inside of the wall. It's probably a safer way to create an effective insulation assembly. You know, of course, as I said at the outset, it is possible to make this system work by installing that foil face material within the wall. But there are just a lot of details that if you, you know, don't get them all right, it could come back to bite you.
If any moisture passes past that on, because you've created that exterior vapor barrier, correct?
Correct. I mean, what we see typically in our heating climate is that the moist, warm air, or the moisture drives out of those walls, and it hits the cold surface in the exterior side of your walls, and it condenses, and that can cause serious problems. So if you're able to, you know, essentially seal up, say, a 2-inch foam board in each one of those cavities and have it be very well sealed on all of the edges, it might just work very well. I mean, sometimes we apply a foam on the inside of cavities, and then we dense pack it or put up fiberglass, and that is an effective way to insulate a wall. So you are, in effect, doing something that is done by some builders. And it, like I say, it can work quite well, but you just have to be careful about the details.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking insulation, ventilation, vapor barriers, home repair with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison and John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As we talk home renovation and repair with our guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry, John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin, I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. Reach us at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. And we're going to go to Joe in Vesper, Michigan next. Joe, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes. About a month ago, I received a card in the mail inviting me to a free steak dinner. And the idea was to go and listen to a promotion about how to make your house more energy efficient. When we were there, what it all boiled down to is the firm was selling aluminum foil to put over your present insulation in the attic. And according to them, this could save you up to and about 60% of your energy costs. And I was wondering what your guest thinks of this idea.
60%. Chad, what do you think?
Well, I guess I would be enthusiastically embracing it if I knew that that were likely to be as effective as it is touted to be. But I don't think that something like that is going to give us the type of performance that we want to see from that sort of a system. And there are some concerns that we have putting up a foil-faced product in an attic like that. So, I get my information primarily from within the kind of building science community, and we always have to be careful when someone is selling a product. But I remain open-minded. There are many things out there that were fringe at one time that now we know are helping us to make our homes more comfortable and energy efficient. This particular thing is not something I would recommend.
Yeah, we're familiar with it, and we see this come about just about in the last few years. The radiant barriers, the foil face, and sometimes it's a little bit of a bubble wrap type material, and it's very reflective to radiant heat energy, and they often assign an equivalent R value, and when you hear the word equivalent R value, it's not a true R value like you're adding insulation. Some studies have showed that it acts as if it's going to reduce heat loss and conductively, if heat's moving from through the material, that's conductive heat loss, and the radiant barrier, the foil, does a very poor job at that, though it does well at reducing radiant heat loss if used appropriately and in the right place. And often the right place where they use it, and I'm speaking in terms of location, is down south to reduce heating loads to prevent the attic from getting excessively hot. So here in our heating-dominated climate, that is not going to save you 60% heating energy, and I would not spend time on installing it in my attic.
Okay, thank you very much.
But I hope the steak was good.
Yeah, it was. All right, good. August in Ontario, Wisconsin. Let's turn to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, my question is, do you guys know where you can, or who supplies borate-only cellulose in Wisconsin? Because I've been looking for it for the past few days, and it's being pretty elusive, and figured you guys might know.
Borate only
Yeah, for the fire retardant on cellulose insulation. I think a supplier that you would go to might be Champion Supply, and they're on the eastern side of the state. And look up Champion Supply Insulation and give those guys a call. I think they'll be able to help you out.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Loba in Madison, on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. I just have a question. 50 years ago, I had a house built, and I had 2 coats of tar put on the basement exterior walls, and I had 5 bags of cement used for the basement. And then, not too long ago, someone said, well, that tar wouldn't last very long anyway. So would you make a comment on that?
I think you did the right thing when you built your home to waterproof the exterior, and we still often use it's a tar-based sealant on the exterior of a foundation. So, I mean, there are other things that can be used. We often do things that are somewhat redundant, multiple systems on the outside of that foundation, because you hope to never have to excavate around the house to deal with a water leak. And it, I'm not sure. Are you having problems with water?
I never had a chance to live in the house, so I don't know. I was just kind of curious.
I think you did the right thing 50 years ago, and I think even if you did something similar today, it's
you'd probably be doing something very similar.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And do you think it's very lasting?
Oh, it'll last.
Said it wouldn't.
Yeah.
Last.
Yeah. No, it's going to last a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And frankly, 50 years, probably last 50 years.
I would think so.
Yeah. Let's turn to Vicki in Duluth, Minnesota next. Hi, Vicki.
Hi there. I have an old house. It was built in 1926. And it doesn't have a lot of overhang, so you can't put ventilation in the soffits. But I have a Spanish colonial and a tile roof. And a couple of winters ago, I had an energy assessment and an update. And, wow. So in the attic, there was frost on the, whatever you call it, between the rafters. And when the guy was doing stuff up there, it got warm and it just rained. But he also, this was the energy guy, he also sealed up all the ways that air could get from the first and second floor up to the attic. And there was a cracked rafter that got fixed. And my contractor, the guy I really trust, that's why I'm asking, is for a second opinion. He talked to the roofer who does tile here in town in Duluth, and he wanted, of course, to put up a scaffold because we put it on the back, and actually that's 3 floors up because we've got a tuck-under garage. So he wanted to charge $5,000 to put up the scaffold. So my contractor said, you know, the house has been here 85 years. What's the difference? You've only had one cracked rafter. Let's just let it go, and, you know, it's been sealed. What do you think?
Well, I think that the most important thing to do in any home is to seal the lid of the house, and that's effectively what it sounds like you did. You went up and you sealed all the places where heat was escaping into that attic. And it sounds like perhaps the rafter itself was not repaired. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, he fixed it. He assisted on, stuff next. We didn't actually take it out.
Right, and that's fine. That's structurally sound, probably, based on what you're describing. And I think that, you know, you did the right thing.
Yeah, so I guess, are we concerned about the rest of the roof, and that's the direction you're going here?
Yeah, well, the question is, since we don't have, you know, fans up there and an opening to vent out because of that soffit issue and the price of the scaffold, my contractor says, it's not going anywhere, let it be. I don't know.
Well, I guess I'm not sure that this is necessarily answering your question, but it raises something that I always like to talk about, which is that if your roof is not ventilated at the lower edge, and part of that is the way the house is put together, it doesn't present an opportunity for it. I'm not sure how a scaffolding might have allowed that to happen, though it sounds like maybe that was what you were hoping to accomplish.
Well, they were going to climb up on the scaffold on the back of the house, which is three floors up, take off the ceramic tile roof, and put in ventilation in the roof.
Oh, okay.
And it just seemed too expensive to my contractor. He didn't want me to spend that kind of money.
Yeah, I would say that you've done the right thing, and that while a ventilated roof deck is, in a perfect world, a great thing to have, that ventilated roof deck, it should always be over top of a well-sealed attic, which is to say, or a well-sealed ceiling, whatever that ceiling surface is in the home. And so that's the most important thing, is keeping the heat in the house. And then if there's an opportunity to then ventilate that unheated cavity up top in the attic, that's great. There should be some ventilation perhaps at the top of that, or I don't know if there are gables, but even if there's no ventilation at all.
Nope.
So well, I would suggest, is it a walk-up attic?
No, it's a trapdoor.
Trapdoor.
I'm a little bit afraid of heights, but I could get a ladder and go up and look and see if it's frosty.
I mean, I think you have the opportunity. If it looks clean and dry and it's an old house and it's been working for you, or if it's things growing on the roof sheathing and water staining everywhere, there's different clues and symptoms that you should look for and just keep an eye on. And maybe you don't need to rush if there's a problem or not a problem. I think you need to maybe just do some visual investigations, whether that's yourself or somebody else, over the course of the winter. Keep an eye on it. I don't think you're going to cause any big problems by delaying this decision and understanding it a little bit better.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much, Vicki, for calling. Appreciate your call. We have a Facebook question from Bernie. Installed all new Zap Pack sash replacement kits on my old Victorian house. I've been noticing that on cold days, the bottoms of the glass have a border of about 1.5 of inches of condensation on them. There are no storms. I've been told that storms will not help this, but we do want to have screens as we have no AC. Will storms stop this and provide any insulating advantage?
Well, what you're likely to see if you put storm windows on a relatively energy-efficient window is that the condensation will migrate out to that storm layer because it will be the colder layer, and it will insulate the primary window a little, and it will also cut down on air leakage potentially a little bit. But then it gives you an even bigger and colder surface on which you're likely to see a lot of condensation and frost. And so generally, the storm window is not going to necessarily make things better. It might, though, save you a little bit on your energy bill, but you're probably looking through icy storm windows. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's often, I don't know if interior storms and interior screens is an option for you. Sometimes they can be well fitted and create a nice seal on the interior, which in some cases that can be advantageous.
Work. Yeah. Well, Jim in Bayfield has, I think, a kind of related question, so let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Good.
My problem is that the house is very well insulated. It's really tight, and all my windows, I have thermal curtains that seal with Velcro around. However, I can't get a tight enough seal to prevent condensation from forming between the insulation and the window itself. So every morning, I've got quite a bit of frost on the windows. I open them all up. The heat exchanger is going full blast, and after a couple of hours, everything clears out. Well, that'd be fine, except that there gets to be quite a lot of moisture, especially on the north windows. And so about every other year, I've got to strip them down and re-urethane them to keep the mold off. Is there any solution for this?
Well, does the curtain that you're using have a vapor barrier in it?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Yeah, that, part of what's going on there, it's just simple physics, that curtain is allowing the windows to be colder because the curtain is successfully preventing the heat in the house from getting to the window. But the little bit of moisture that is in the air is then hitting a colder piece of glass. And so, you know, therein is the problem, and you get more condensation than you would otherwise get.
Yeah, the solution there is we need to put more energy out at that window. I mean, so you're trying to save energy with those curtains, and we have to make that decision whether we're saving enough energy to justify that every other year stripping windows. So we do have to, in some cases, forego that energy-saving measure if we want that integrity of that window, unless we're going to upgrade the window or make some other changes. So if we're going to keep that window in place, we like it as is, it may be removing those curtains in the coldest parts of the year so that we maintain the integrity of those windows and sacrifice a little energy savings. I think for the integrity of the home, it might be certainly is an easy step maybe to take place from the get-go.
Yep, there you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling, Jim. And a Facebook question from Sharon. We're going to add on to our small country house this summer. I've been talking to a builder, and he mentioned he was going to a class on one-foot-thick walls. Not found anything on the internet. Hoping you could point me in the right direction. One-foot-thick walls. What do you think, John?
I think that they're a good idea. I think that if you can afford it and go that direction, there's a couple of ways to achieve them. But if you're if you value low energy homes and low energy use houses, and you want to take that extra step to get to the point where we minimize the energy use within our buildings, we have the lowest utility bills possible. There are certainly successful ways to build a 12-inch thick wall. It may be a double wall is a common way to do that. Two by four studded walls spaced apart, and we're able to put a variety of insulation types within that larger cavity to reduce the energy use and obviously increase comfort. So I think that you would look at it as not simply doing the walls 12 inches thick, but then how are we going to match up the rest, the roof and the maybe the foundation or the floor, so that we, if we go that route with that thick of a wall, we're doing the rest of the house with equivalent R values and details, so that we are satisfied with the end product.
And I would just add that the one of the most important things that's often addressed by these thick wall systems, but it's not always addressed, and that is that thermal bridging becomes the most challenging thing, or the most important remaining detail to reduce or eliminate. And you wouldn't want to, for example, build a house out of 2x12s and allow that heat loss to go right through that 2x12 at every point in the house. And so I'm sure that the class, or I would hope that the class that your builder is attending, is addressing that issue. But it's not enough simply to make the wall thicker. You want to make that wall, you know, really good at reducing and eliminating heat loss. Mm-hmm.
Some good resources for that. A certification that's becoming a little more popular here in the States is Passive House. So Passive House, you can Google and look at. I'm sure you'll be able to find some construction details on how to achieve their energy standards. They do have certainly detailed specifications, but they also have energy use specifications that have to be met, and it'll show you details how to do that. Buildingscience.com has some great sketches and photos of wall details. Building America is another resource that you'll find these details, and you'll be able to look for yourself on how to get the job done.
There you go. Thank you very much. Joel in Medford, turning to you next. Hi, Joel.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
All right. I'm actually nervous. First time I called into a radio show.
You're doing fine so far. Go ahead.
All right. My question is about the opposite of the one-foot walls. I have little thin walls. It's a house we bought about a year or two ago, and the original part of the house dining room, kitchen, and two bedrooms, has a finished basement under it. And for lack of better terms, I call it a Lincoln log house. They're actual logs, but they're all manufactured. They're about 3 inches thick by about 5 inches high, and that's all. Yep. There's nothing on the outside. There's nothing on the inside. The kitchen, dining room, it's all windows and cabinets, so we can't do anything with that. But those two bedrooms are where we are going to be eventually having children's rooms. And they have cold air returns. We got forced air. But if we close those bedroom doors, it's like turning the heat off in there. Is there a way to, and they have vaulted ceilings on the inside, so I don't even know how much insulation is in the ceiling. But as far as the walls go, it's log on the outside, it's log on the inside. And like I said, they're about 3 inches thick. The windows are about 2 years old, and they're triple pane. Is there a way, or would it be safe, I guess, or feasible to fur out the walls and or ceiling and put some kind of sheeting insulation in there? Or what could we do to keep what heat goes in there in there?
Yeah, because we like the walls the way they are, huh?
Well, the wife likes the log. I said if we have to, and they're just, like I said, they're only about 6 inches tall, but if it comes down to it, we can, fur them all, put drywall, and then go tongue and groove over the top. Or
is it a
like
solid
that.
Wall, or is it one of these that has insulation built into it?
No, they're logs.
They're logs.
They're logs.
They're all exactly the same size. That's why I call them Lincoln logs. They almost, if you look at them from the end of the house where they crisscross, they almost have like a half inch, almost like a tongue and groove the way they stack them. But they're all sanded. They're smooth like that.
So I guess it's understanding how leaky the seams are between them, right? And then finding a caulk or a sealant that's going to blend in nice and not ruin, the aesthetics of that log. If you're willing and able to investigate that a little bit, so that we can, in the wintertime, they probably dry a little bit and the cracks get a little bit bigger when we don't want them to get bigger.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, Wisconsin, 30 degrees and below. You shut those doors and the rooms are 20 degrees colder than the rest of the house.
Yeah, pretty tough if we're going to maintain those walls the way they are. And I understand the reason to do that. We just need to find a flexible caulk that's going to look good if that's an option to you. If it's not, and we're going to leave those logs the way they are. I think adding an R5 to the ceiling isn't necessarily going to make a difference in your comfort. So I hesitate, asking you to do that solely based on comfort. Unless there's room to fill that cavity within that cathedral ceiling a little bit, and there's more room, we certainly want to go after that. But those walls probably have the most surface area in those bedrooms compared to that ceiling, right? You got maybe three sides or two sides on exterior walls.
Yeah, both bedrooms are on the end of the house, so they have a shared wall, and then there's two exterior walls on each room.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, pretty tough if you're going to shut those rooms off. Darn it, they're going to get cold, and there's not. I don't have a solution for you other than, when somebody wants to use that room, you know, if you have a guest over, then that's a portable heater to keep some comfort in there.
Yeah.
Or you're going to have to renovate that wall and fur it to the inside and do it like everybody else and make it comfortable.
If I were to do that, what sort of, with the walls being as drafty as they are, what sort of insulation would you recommend using, and would it be safe to drywall and tape and mud, or is that just going to get moldy on the backside?
Yeah, no, you might just use spray foam, the closed cell foam up right on the inside of that log, and know that you're never going to go back to it, and then fur it up.
We're gonna do it, yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, Joel.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Chad Spade and John Viner, our guest today. Chad owns Chad's Carpentry in Madison. John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions as we talk home remodeling and repair, insulation, ventilation, vapor barriers. The number 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can join in there. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair with John Viner. and Chad Spate. Let's go to Guy in Milwaukee next. Hi, Guy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Actually, you mentioned the closed cell insulation, and that was what my question was. What was the current thought on the efficiency, the effectiveness of that spray on, especially as it pertains to insulating attics? And does it have any, because if you spray the underdeck directly, you don't have this, that the airflow that you usually have when you're using fiberglass. So is there any bad effects on the shingles?
Well, it is true that many shingles, the warranty on the shingles can have a exclusion where they will not cover or honor the warranty if the shingle is applied over an unvented roof deck. And when we apply foam to the underside of a roof deck, we are basically abandoning the venting. So, yet having said that, most roof decks are only partially vented, which is to say that there are places where, you know, there's shingles and there's framing underneath it, and there's no ventilation at certain spaces all over the roof. So venting is always something that is less than 100%. Research has shown that generally a properly sealed hot roof where the foam, the closed cell foam, is applied to the roof deck, the temperature of the shingles will only be about 1.5 degrees higher in a given sun exposure. So there is not substantial additional heat caused by the hot roof assembly. But that doesn't necessarily allow the warranty to be honored. Mm. But I would say that a properly applied closed cell foam is still an excellent way to properly insulate and air seal certain homes. It is possible to, when you redo a roof, to either put furring over top of the old roof deck and create a new ventilated roof deck on top of the old one. We've done that on some homes. That way you have kind of the foamed hot roof in the original structure, and you add a ventilation layer on top of that when you re-roof. It's also possible to install sheet good insulation material on top of a roof and then either ventilate it or not over top of that. So there are a variety of ways to increase the R value, and then whether or not that roof is going to be well ventilated or ventilated at all is certainly a variable. The most important detail, though, that I've learned the hard way is that you have to have a closed cell foam if you're going to create a hot roof. It's very important.
Does that apply to? I know there's like water-based products and I believe the urethane-based products. Are those both closed cell? I've heard of open cell foams too.
There are open cell foams and there are closed cell foams, and it is not necessarily a function of whether or not it's water-based or urethane-based, but most of the urethane foams are closed cell, and most of the water-based foams are open cell. There are supposedly some soy foams that are closed cell, and of course there are some open cell products that are an oil-based product, but that's generally the rule.
So, and is this, you say it's really important to have closed cell for the roof. Is that for vapor barrier problems?
Well, it has to do with vapor barrier, and it also has to do with maximizing the R value. The closed cell products tend to have about twice the R value as the open cell, and that is really critical because when you know, the R value determines how much heat is going to move through that assembly, through that roof, that, you know, that insulated cavity. And we have seen with a project that had open cell foam a lot of ice damming that is something we just never seen before with a closed cell foam. And it really had to do with heat loss. You know, now if you had, 16 inches of space, then maybe you could get away with a open cell foam.
Sure.
But, you know, typically you don't have enough depth to get the sort of thermal resistance that you need and want to prevent snow from melting on a Wisconsin roof deck.
There you go. I've got an older house that where the roof rafters are or joists, or whatever is the terminology. They're fairly small by today's standards, maybe 2x6s, and there's the attic's not particularly big, so there's not a whole lot of space to fur it out further and to provide a deep fiberglass insulation. So I was considering using a foam based insulation.
Yeah, having the two-part foam applied up in that into either just on down on top of the ceiling from the attic side, and make sure that you seal it up really well on top of every partition or every wall where the top plate sits below that the ceiling framing. It's really important to seal the lid of the house, particularly on the exterior walls. And if you foam that really well, that is going to give you the best performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just one more comment, just so I'm clear. Don't choose the fiberglass on the roof deck with a plastic vapor barrier, right? So it sounded like you were thinking that direction. I just want to let you know that maybe that's not a good idea.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Pete and LaCrosse next. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Larry, John, and Chad. The caller earlier who was talking about the 12-inch thick walls is pretty much going in the same direction I am, and that is that I'm surprised that thick wall houses aren't more common than they are presently. In particular, I did some calculations based on retail prices of the 2x4s, the fiberglass insulation, et cetera, that it takes in addition to the original and to the material of the original wall to make a thicker wall. And it's surprisingly cheap relative to the energy that it saves. So that's what I'm looking for some comments on, is why aren't thicker walls more common, especially given that we can easily end up in a situation where the energy bill plus mortgage cost is cheaper, is lower on a thick wall house than on a skinny wall house. So, you know, where are we as far as beefing up our building standards to thicker walls?
Well, you are correct that, I mean, the research that's been done on this by the Passive House Institute that John referred to earlier has shown that, you know, building a passive house is maybe adding 5% to building cost. I mean, it varies. Some people say that it, you know, it doesn't really add anything. Others say it's maybe adding a 10% premium. It depends on, you know, the details, which is, that's always the case. The devil's in the details. But to just basically do those things which allow for the much greater R values of all the exterior surfaces for the envelope, it does not add a tremendous amount of cost. But we still live, at least I think psychologically, we live in a cheap energy kind of, you know, economy. And it is still relatively inexpensive to heat and cool our homes. And so what happens is that the building code becomes the standard. And, you know, 95% of all homes get built to whatever that minimum code is, and it's only a custom home that's going to exceed that. You know, banks don't are only beginning now to look at energy use as a factor in determining how much money they're going to lend to a home buyer. You know, it's been known for some time that if you can, you know, add a little cost to the building in exchange for reducing the utility bill, that's a good trade-off to make. But the bank, if they're only considering the mortgage and not the energy bill, then it's harder for the homeowner to be able to, make that choice, essentially. So it's a complicated issue, but hopefully talking about it will help to drive policymakers to maybe start to improve those standards.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully the banks can run the numbers and they can be the ones saying, hey, you can't afford the skinny wall house, but hey, this thick wall house over here, you can afford.
Yeah.
It's important for us all to essentially continue to bring up that issue. And I do think that, the trend is towards recognizing the value of a high-performance home, certainly. Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling, Pete. Appreciate it. Randy emailed wonders about a new water softener system that uses a citric acid cartridge instead of salt. It's called Nuvo. Do you guys know anything about that? Had any experience with it?
I have not, Larry. I have not.
I've heard about it, and I'll let you know if I end up buying one, because I'm thinking about it.
Oh, you're thinking about it. Okay. Well, Randy, you hang in there. It's quite possible that Chad will be owning one of these, and then you can give us a report.
The traditional water softeners use an exorbitant amount of water to constantly cleanse the brine solution, through the system, so... I'm seeing it as a way to potentially really reduce my water use.
We'll talk some more about that. Chad Spade, John Viner, our guests, they'll be back right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. So happy to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. My guests today talking insulation, ventilation, vapor barriers, home remodeling and repair. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Happy to have them here, and thank you so much for listening in. Lots of callers online already. The number is 800-642-1234. Philip in Maple, Wisconsin. You are up next. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of real quick questions following up on the folks that were talking about condensation on windows and storm windows. And the insulated curtains.
Yeah.
We have insulated curtains and have had the same situation. We also have experimented with replacing the exterior screen with a sheet of glass. And it does seem to work a little bit, but not very much. So my first question is, what about putting movable insulation on the outside of the window so that you keep the window warm, like the gentleman was saying, versus putting the curtain on the inside? How about putting a movable insulation on the outside? How would that work? And my second question is, our windows, they're double-hung wooden windows. They have a dado along the bottom side as a place to hook your finger to raise the bottom double-hung window. What could be done to fill in that dado, because it gets iced up really badly?
Well, I'm not sure about your second question. That's an interesting thought. I think it's probably just the fact that it's at the bottom of the window, and that's where the moisture is going to go. It's probably purely... I don't know how you could address that, really. But I would say that there are some high... performance window covers that I've seen that are some homes. I mean, this is a very kind of unique and I would imagine relatively costly thing to build. But I've seen homes that at nighttime they've got little motors and a big insulated panel rolls over from the side of the window and comes in front of the window and seals into the house. And this is on a high performance kind of modern home to essentially do just that, to seal in and insulate the exterior side of those window openings. And in doing that, keeping the glass warm, eliminating condensation, reducing, if not eliminating, any air leakage at those windows, significantly increasing the R value in those window openings. But that is a very unique system, and I'm not sure of a relatively simple, low-cost way to accomplish that goal.
Yeah, the exterior insulated shutters, we just don't see them on the marketplace or being used, and I think it's primarily because of the expense, but I think you might be able to find some that are out there and available. We'll have to do a little digging. Here's another idea. How about behind that insulated curtain, if you're willing to put up the shrink wrap in front of your windows, if you make a good seal with, you know, the common weather stripping shrink wrap that you put on the windows and you seal it well, you're going to prevent that moisture from getting to the window and at the time. And then the insulated shade covers that during the night. And if you did make a perfect seal, you're going to stop that moisture from hitting that glass. And it's a pretty low-cost way to manage that frost and condensation on the glass. We just have to put it up and take it down, and hopefully we don't mar up any quality woodwork, right?
And Jean on Facebook wrote that she has a north side triple window patio sliding door combo with an insulating blanket in channels. And she says the easiest way to clear up the frost formed between the blanket and the window panes is to run a fan on a low setting for about a half an hour. It dries off the wood very well. That's what she does.
Yep, it's going to work in some cases and maybe not all, but certainly that management and energy, one way or another, it's going to take some energy to, yeah, to keep that thing dry.
One way or the other.
So is that what the second gentleman was talking about is essentially putting an interior storm window on, only it's just a thin piece of plastic that...
That's right. It's $12, $14 at your hardwood store, and you're making a solid interior storm that's airtight.
Mm-hmm.
There
Do
you
other
go.
Kinds of interior storms work?
Absolutely. There are some interior storms that you can have custom made and fitted. I think the challenge depends on the window that you have and whether there's a nice place to make that look well and make a tight fit. But many do. Many times that is an option.
Okay.
There you go. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Jackie in Sussex, your turn. Hi, Jackie.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. And it's kind of off topic, but I thought maybe it would be a quick answer. We have in our kitchen, we have linoleum that is at least 35 years old. And when I went to a flooring place to find out about replacing it, I was told that I would need to have somebody come in and do asbestos abatement because there's probably asbestos in the adhesive. I was wondering, I'm in my 70s, my husband's in his 70s. Can we just pull this up ourselves, and then how would we dispose of it?
Well, I wouldn't. Okay, you may legally pull it up yourself, but I wouldn't recommend it. It is possible to simply take a small core sample of the material and either take it to or mail it to the state hygiene lab, and they will analyze it. And it costs $30 or $40 to have multiple layers from one room analyzed. And they'll let you know whether or not there's asbestos in any of the layers, and if so, how much asbestos content there is. Typically, for a flooring company or a remodeling company to remove something, they're going to need someone who is certified or licensed to do that analysis to determine that, in fact, it is all clear, that there is no asbestos. And then if there is no asbestos, then, you know, they can remove it or you could remove it. But to answer your question specifically legally, as far as I understand the law, the homeowner can do that, but it I would not recommend, if there's asbestos in that material, that you remove it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you know, the last thing, I just possibly, sometimes you can go over top of that old floor material, whether it has asbestos in it or not. There's nothing that prevents you or a flooring installer potentially from installing a new thin subfloor and then a new layer of flooring over top of everything. And that's one way just to not worry about it.
Then you sealed it off, and probably even safer than if you took it out.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, good. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for calling. Kevin in Toma, hello to you.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I had questions about water heaters and whole house ventilation systems. I'm in the midst of researching both of those right now. My first question was regarding water heaters. I wanted to know if your guests had any experience using heat pump water heaters.
I don't have one. I certainly have seen them in use and have talked to a few people that have them, and I don't have any problem with recommending a heat pump water heater. I mean, there are, I guess there are some concerns, but generally they are efficient. It is pulling some heat out of the basement because it uses an air source heat pump and it pulls air out of the basement. But if we're conditioning that basement and having some livable space down there and putting some heat, we're not necessarily dropping the temperature in that basement significantly, has been my experience. So I think it's a fair way to go.
Okay. And it's also true that they can act as a dehumidifier?
Well, yes, I think that maybe to some degree they could act as a dehumidifier. I have to think about that in the winter time, where they're pulling some air from that basement. I'm not sure to the extent, but I think there's a possibility of a little bit of dehumidification.
Okay, and then regarding whole house ventilation systems, I recently read about Braun's SmartSense intelligent ventilation system. It's a whole house system. Do you have any experience with that? And if not, is there a system you would recommend?
Again, I don't have experience with that particular system. And whole house ventilation, we're talking about a system maybe where you're interested in filtration as well.
Yeah.
And tied it into your duct system of your forced
right.
air furnace.
Yeah, bringing in fresh air and conditioning it either with a energy recover ventilator or heat recover ventilator, and then distributing that air throughout the house and also expelling stale air.
Right. So you could simply use that air-to-air heat exchanger, right, that heat recovery ventilator, and then they're going to have, I guess, where you're going with it, you want an accessory that actually is going to filter that air at the same time, and then maybe connect it to your whole house distribution system of your heating and cooling.
Right.
Yeah.
This Braun system looks pretty slick because apparently it'll set the amount of air you want to expel based on the number of square footage and bedrooms, and then it'll tie into the air intake and bring in the amount of necessary air as the stale air is being expelled, but I have yet to find anybody who's used it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the technology for whole house ventilation systems that have been is excellent, and there's a lot of manufacturers that do a great job, and the devil is in the details, as Chad said earlier, on the installation side and having a good mechanical system that mechanical installer that's going to know those details and get it right for you. So I think it's a great idea that you're doing the research and understand those details yourself and the specifications on startup, on what it should measure, and have a performance contractor, mechanical contractor that's actually going to document setup procedures for you. I would highly recommend that you had somebody that is going to take it to that level at your request and not grumble about a little bit of extra detail there.
Okay, super. Okay, appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, someone wondered earlier, we had a caller that asked about borate-only cellulose insulation, and another person wondered, could you talk a little bit more about borate-only cellulose insulation? He'd never heard of it.
So the borate is used as a fire retardant, and all cellulose insulation has, we want to certainly use a fire retardant in that in the manufacturing process. So the two types, borate and ammonia sulfite, is the other fire retardant used in cellulose. I know that I guess I always think about borate as something that you might sprinkle around the outside of your house to prevent ants and things like that from getting in a crawl space or a basement. And it's pretty benign to human touch, right? I think it's pretty safe that way, as well as I think it does give it the highest fire safety rating if we use borate. Ammonia sulfite, it obviously does the job and is approved. There has been a disadvantage. Some have complained a little bit about smells with ammonia sulfite. I think it's when it gets damp in high humidity conditions that they might get a little bit of odor from that. Not that it isn't going to work for you.
Rich in Hudson, on to you now. Hi, Rich.
Yeah, hi. I have a two-story house with a fireplace on the interior, not on the exterior wall. And the chimney stack starts on the second floor and goes up through the attic. And we had the home energy audit, and they did the blower test and found out that quite a bit of air is moving between the second floor and the attic. And I'm just wondering, what's the best way to seal around that chimney, if it's possible to use a fire-blocking foam or what there?
So where that – is it a wood fireplace on the second floor?
It's a Wilkening brand. It's bricked in. It's like a wood fireplace, two-sided. And then above it, it's got inside the brick facade, it's got cement block, and it was cemented over the top around the chimney itself. And then next to the stack is built on inside of a finished wall, goes up to the attic.
Okay. So what goes through into the attic is masonry, is the cement block.
It's actually a brick.
A brick.
Yeah, and what the original builder did, they insulated the attic, and then they laid some cardboard right up to the edge of that brick, and then put, you know, loose fill on top of it, and that's just awful.
Right. Yeah. So a couple ways. We wouldn't use a spray foam, even though there's spray foam that has a special fire rating to them. It's not designed to be used up against any type of chimney, so we wouldn't want to use spray foam. The best material there simply would be a metal flashing will work well. Some types of rock wool insulation can be used to fill that cavity. And then we'd put an air seal over the top. But I guess I would stick to a nice metal flashing that's bent up the side of the masonry chimney, you know, and then a right angle that comes down in front of it, and we would caulk that in place pretty heavily.
Okay, what kind of, like a cement caulk or?
I guess up against the chimney we'd use a fire-rated caulk while we're up on the chimney side. And then just generally, if we're caulking it to wood framing members when we're standing up on the roof joist or on the ceiling joist. So just a good latex caulk is going to work fine, except for on the chimney where we want a fire-rated caulk.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Gloria in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, I live in Waukesha.
Yes.
And our house is 32 years old.
Okay.
And every 4 years, my husband has to keep replacing up where the rain gutters are, the flat area, not the upright area.
Okay.
I can't remember what you call it.
So this is on the roof, you're saying?
Near the roof, the underside, the under eaves.
Soffit.
Oh, the soffit. Yeah, I bet it's the soffit.
Or the fascia, where the gut is. Is it the surface? Okay.
He has to keep replacing some of that all the time, every 3 or 4 years.
Is it rotting or?
It's rotting.
So he's getting water in there.
Is it in the same location that you're replacing, or?
It's all around the house.
Hmm.
Now our house was built, like I said, 23 years ago. We had plastic wrap. We had 3/4-inch insulation, the styrofoam, with the aluminum sheet, with the aluminum side. And I'm just trying to figure out if we take and replace the fascia and the under-eaves with aluminum, is that going to cause this moisture to come to cause other problems?
Yeah, sounds like we got to identify where that moisture is coming from. If it's from the attic, and I wonder if you went up in your attic in a cold day, if it would look moist up there and there'd be condensation. Like, sounds like a humidity issue in the attic working its way down, running down the underside of the roof deck and dripping out at the soffits is one possibility. And then we certainly have to address the root cause of that moisture, you know, the source of it, before we do any other replacement.
And who could I get to tell me what's wrong?
I guess I would turn to the Focus on Energy program and the consultants that work within the Focus on Energy program. So focusonenergy.com will be able to, you'll be able to find a link or a tab to point you to find a contractor or consultant.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Rob in Iola, on to you. Hi, Rob.
Yeah, thanks for calling, or for my taking my call. Say, I got a, I have a 10-12 pitch, and it's a cathedral ceiling with an interior fireplace, and it's a wood-burning unit that I boxed in, and it runs up, and it kind of goes out through the soffits and into probably the first set of ceiling joists. Well, what I'm having problems is it's condensating to the point where I've even seen icicles coming out of my soffit vents. And I took a peek in there and I saw mold in the soffit area. And I cannot recall how I did this 15 years ago, but I want to know what's the right way to fix it, because I'm going to be putting a tin roof on and I'm going to expose that and try and take care of that problem before I put the tin on.
So is the icicles out the soffit, that's near your interior chimney? That I didn't quite follow that, the line of that chimney. It's an interior fireplace, and it goes up through some interior soffits?
No, it goes up through the center of the house, up all the way through the roof,
mm-hmm.
and then it's at the peak of the roof. And then the soffits, it vents through the soffit and partially into the first set of ceiling joists. And then it goes all the way down through the bottom to the open cathedral ceiling, all the way down to the 8-foot level where the soffits meet. And so there's some kind of condensation or something where the icicles are actually forming out of the soffit vents, you know, completely down at the bottom, because the fireplace goes right up through the center of the, on the peak of the roof, and it's venting out the bottom. So I got a pretty good condensation issue there or something, but I'm putting tin on, and I am going to rip this apart and fix it before I put the tin on. So
we got about a minute.
Okay, is it, when you say it's venting, I mean, are you saying that is there a fresh air system that's connected to, is this a wood-burning fireplace?
Yeah, it's a wood-burning fireplace, but and when it goes up through the soffits, the condensation is just running down through the soffits and dripping out the ridge vents. So there's no venting in any situation there. It's just I took a peek and then I saw mold in there.
I guess I would go to the focusonenergy.com website and find a consultant to take a look for you. I think that's going to be the best plan.
Oh, absolutely. I really think focusonenergy.com. Go there. You're going to get somebody that will come out and take a look, and because it's really too complex, really, without looking at it in person to be able to give you good advice. So I'd highly recommend the Focus on Energy, and I'd highly recommend that you tune in again when we have our two guests on, Chad Spate and John Viner. Chad owns Chad's Carpentry in Madison. You can go to chadscarpentry.com. John Viner with the Energy Center of Wisconsin, and John just. Energy Center of Wisconsin, you type that in and you're going to, it's going to pop right up.
Yep, you betcha.
And they'll be back again and we'll do this again with them. Thank you all for listening. Tomorrow, Garden Talk, Brian Huddleston and Liz Freemouth will be on to talk about preventing and treating disease in your garden and houseplants. Stay with us.